I'm Sean Haney, and this is Real Ag on the Weekend. Let's get real and get connected with the week that was in Canadian agriculture. Real Ag on the Weekend starts now.
Welcome to Real Ag on the Weekend. I'm your host, Sean Haney of realagriculture.com. Hope you had yourselves a great week. We've got a great show for you here today. It was a busy week at Real Agriculture. It was a busy week in Canada as we had a budget that was rolled out. We're going to play some reaction from the Real Agriculture team from the Real Ag Radio podcast this week. Lindsay Smith, Kelvin Heppner, and myself broke down what we saw, what we didn't see, and did the Carney budget live up to the expectations? We'll cover that and try to break it down as much as we possibly can from an agricultural perspective. We've got a product spotlight with Bryce Geisel of Koch Industries, and we're also going to hear what farmers had to say about those China EV tariffs. Should the government lift those tariffs with the idea that it potentially could smooth out some of the trade tension between Canada and China and get product flowing as farmers needed to and expected to, especially with some of the concerns about farm profitability and some of the grain and oilseeds not moving here because of some of these tariffs. Okay, so if you have any feedback on what you hear today, you can send me an email, shaney@realagriculture.com. You can also call the Real Ag feedback line or text it at 855-776-6147. We had a great week this week. I was in Toronto to do a fireside chat with Lauren Lee Orr, who's the VP of Commercial with Corteva AgriSciences. She was the 2024 AgriMarketer of the Year from CAMA. And her and I had a really intimate fireside chat that was really, it was fantastic. We had lots of questions from the audience, and it was a great reception. And then I was also at AgriTrade in Red Deer, Alberta on Thursday and Friday. Had a lot of fun with a number of different clients and ran into so many members of the Real Ag on the Weekend audience. It was a great time being able to wander around, and it was busy. It was packed. You know, and that's the fascinating thing, that the farmers are concerned. There is some concerns out in the marketplace, of course, for a lot of farmers. But there seemed to be a little bit of lift in optimism. I felt pretty good about the crowds were fantastic. The booths were packed. And the weather was great, which is probably the most important of all of those. Anyway, we had a great time at AgriTrade this week. Wednesday was super busy. I heard from some farmers that I ran into. And Thursday and Friday were very busy as well. Okay, let's get to the Real Ag team's breakdown of this budget that we heard earlier this week on Tuesday from Prime Minister Mark Carney. Here's a portion of the conversation.
A lot of talk in this budget, definitely a shift in tone from the Trudeau Liberal era. There's more focus on competitiveness. Productivity was mentioned 131 times in the budget. Trade certainly emphasized, and the importance of export infrastructure highlighted in the budget. So I think in many ways, shifting to things that we talk about on the Friday Issues panel often as being important for Canadian agriculture, those we did see some of those messaging things coming loud and clear through this budget. The follow-through, though, I'd say the expectations were sky-high for this budget and probably impossible to meet in reality. But I think, in general, the budget generally disappointingly not bold. In many cases, where we were expecting Carney, based on his election campaign promises, to make bold moves and changes, the government looks to be kind of setting a path forward based on least resistance instead. On agriculture itself, so you've mentioned the $78 billion deficit, Sean. There's about $140 billion in new spending in this budget. A lot of that is military related, with the promise to ramp up Canada's military spending to meet those NATO targets. There's about $60 billion in cuts or savings coming from this initiative the government has undergone over the summer to find 15% savings in most departments over the next 3 years. On the agriculture front is where we get to Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. This next year, they're looking to save about $112 million. So this is just a drop in the bucket of the overall government, but $112 million in savings slash cuts coming to the agriculture department. About $79 million of that will come from programming, another $34 million from operations. So we have yet to see most of the details here on which programs will be affected. The budget specifically mentions the Living Labs program will be wound down, and that AAFC will be reducing scientific activities where they can be streamlined where capacity exists within universities and industries. So we're expecting in the next week or two more details here in terms of where these cuts are going to affect agriculture and Agri-Food Canada specifically. But yeah, lots of different nuggets in the budget too across other departments, and we can get into that here over the next few minutes.
Well, hey, Lindsay, like, for those listeners on this show, if they were doing some prop betting on, you know, Bet360 or FanDuel, we gave them the insight because I believe that the host of this show said, take the under, and that's what we got.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, it's, yeah, I think most of the reaction really in the last 24 hours has been underwhelming, right? This probably was one of the most hyped budgets that we've seen in a very long time. You know, Carney did a statement to Canada. He was prepping everybody for the, I think in French he used the word austerity, you know, and really sort of priming everybody for, like, not just the fact that yes, there would be cuts, but like there were supposed to be these, you know, once in a lifetime kind of changes. I don't know that we got there. And I think that that's, you know, it's disappointing for sure. I mean, I suppose the alternative is it could have been like an absolute, you know, like slash and burn kind of budget. But on, I don't know, like a lot of the individual things for Canadians will stay essentially the same. And I think that's where they're going to probably get some pushback. So a lot of the programming, like, you know, the child tax benefit or the $10 a day daycare, et cetera, all of that is staying in place, but it's not improving. So, you know, for those people, those Canadians out there saying, like, you know, affordability is my biggest concern, there's not much in this budget that's going to immediately help them in any way, shape, or form, or even give them a sense of helping. What I see in this budget, though, is, I will say, you know, to the, and I don't know if it's good, whatever, I do think there are big picture, long-term commitments in this budget that are probably important and needed to be done. So on that end, I guess it came through, but like overall, not necessarily though, even on that front, momentous in any way.
So don't you think though, in a way, it makes sense why the Prime Minister went the way he did in terms of focusing on, you know, trying to foster investment growth in the country? You know, we have serious economic issues that need to be dealt with. And it's, the timing is not right for dealing with things like, although the, you know, the child tax credit and daycare, all those things are important. I'm not saying they're not, but they kind of got trumped a little bit here by the business growth and the need for economic, because the last government, the Trudeau government for 10 years, you could argue really didn't care about the business investment side of it. So this may be is this a kind of a recalibration, Lindsay? Is that fair?
I do. I think it is. And I think plenty of people are sort of saying this is more of a Harper budget than certainly anything to do with a Trudeau budget. I would say it's a Carney budget. That's what we're going to get. He's a banker, and that's what it is. And yeah, I would agree that realistically, you know, this isn't a budget that you would campaign with or campaign on, right? This is a budget of doing the work of being a government.
We've got more of the Real Agriculture team's reaction to the Carney budget from earlier this week. When we come back, you're listening to Real Ag on the Weekend.
Invigor Book and Buy ends November 14th. Run, don't walk, to invigorbookandbuy.ca to find out how to get $30 off per bag. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to Real Ag on the Weekend, hosted by Sean Haney of realagriculture.com on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. You're listening to Real Ag on the Weekend, hosted by Sean Haney of realagriculture.com on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. We're breaking down what we heard this week from Prime Minister Mark Carney on the budget from an agriculture perspective. We'll continue the conversation that I had with Lindsay Smith and Kelvin Heppner of Real Agriculture.
The deficit number is eye-watering. There's no way around that one. Like, that is an absolutely huge number. It is the one that I think the budget does sort of lay out how that will be managed going forward. The deficit is supposed to, you know, go down between now and the 29-30 budget. That's, I don't know, does anybody look at those 3 or 4 year numbers? I don't think so. But that's what's, you know, forecasted. So I think that To give Carney credit, I think that there are mechanisms within this budget that will achieve big picture things that, that need to be done. I guess the question comes down to, is it enough and is it fast enough? Because a lot of these are like what I would consider more long-term good moves, but we are in a really tough spot now. So while I might, you know, recognize that changes we make now impact 5 years out, 6 years out, 10 years out, that's a tough pill to swallow for people who are struggling now or companies that are struggling now.
Yeah, I kind of wonder here a little bit if a little bit of a missed opportunity on the cutting side, you know, because Prime Minister Carney is a Liberal. If we had seen, if it was Prime Minister Poilievre and we saw even these cuts or more, we would have seen a freak out, right? The reaction would be a lot different. There was an opportunity here for a Liberal Prime Minister that is financially focused to kind of do some rebalancing on the cost side. I kind of wonder, Kelvin, if this has been a missed opportunity.
Yeah, that's where I think this wasn't as bold as it could have been. There are some cuts projected to the federal public service in the budget of about 40,000 positions going to 2029, so quite a ways into the future, and that is more significant than any cuts that Prime Minister Harper made, for example, that did draw major backlash. So there is some signs of reining in things there. Of course, the public service has ballooned much more than that, over 100,000 positions during the Trudeau era. So it's not pulling that back all the way. I think in many ways, this budget, though, is a recognition of what Manitoba Premier Wab Kanu often says about how the economic horse has to pull the social cart. This is about the economic horse and making sure that that horse is fed, and that even going back to the last fiscal update we had from the federal government, since we didn't have a budget back in spring, Chrystia Freeland last December was taught in that update, there was projections of GDP growth that we are not even halfway at that point. And like where our GDP growth since then is only half of what was projected last December. And so that's where I think Carney is recognizing this. And in terms of timeline, I think we have to give government credit for when they do implement actions that are medium to long term in perspective, not just short term sugar highs for voters and political players, that type of thing. The one thing, though, is that a lot of so people were expecting tax reform, and Carney had talked about making tax reform. That's one of the things the business community is disappointed that there hasn't been a whole lot of here. But one thing that they have done a whole lot of on the tax front is bring forward immediate expensing measures or accelerated expensing measures so that capital investments in the manufacturing and processing side of things, whether it's equipment or facilities, that type of thing, productivity enhancing assets, they can be written off much quicker. And that's something that doesn't cost the government. Sure, it costs the government revenue down the road, but it's not something where they have to get programs up and running and then hand out grants and have application programs, that type of thing. So I think that productivity super deduction, as they're calling it, to compete with the U.S. and the Big Beautiful Bill, that is a measure that certainly in agriculture, I think we should be hopeful that it makes investment in processing and value add in Canada more competitive.
Yeah, I thought we would maybe see some sort of look at the corporate tax rate and tying that to companies making
it. Yeah, that wasn't touched.
You know, and making sure that we are, you know, Canada is competitive on that front, especially as we see the U.S. with such efforts on for, you know, reshoring some of the manufacturing and trying to combat some of that thing, especially after the Stellantis exit.
There's another 30, 40 different angles here that are potentially relevant and significant to agriculture. There's not a lot of detail. First would be the cancellation of the increase to the capital gains inclusion rate that was made temporarily earlier this year. That's made permanent, so that's not happening. There's funding for Canadian Food Inspection Agency to work on digitizing import-export certificates, funding for working on market access issues in other countries, so think of some of our tariff challenges overseas. Interswitching for railway was not mentioned in the budget, but there was a very generic, vague sentence about continuing to consult with the grain industry on supply chain issues. There's funding for Environment Canada's modeling systems. There's legislative changes to the Red Tape Reduction Act to give ministers authority to create regulatory sandboxes, they're calling it, which is like pilot projects, temporary exemptions for testing products, services, new regulatory approaches. So that's part of the Red Tape Reduction. There's plans to change the greenwashing legislation that was passed last year to remove some of the investment uncertainty factors there. Changes to the 15-year cyclical pesticide reevaluations that the Pest Management Regulatory Agency does. We're looking for details on that. Do you want me to keep going? Cuts at Stats Canada that could potentially affect our crop reports. Yeah. You mentioned Protein Industries Canada. There's reference to certain funding envelopes in the clusters not being renewed. So that could potentially affect Protein Industries Canada. So looking for clarity on that. So that's just a few of the topics here. I think there's still a few more that I haven't mentioned yet.
Well, and I'll add to that. There's, as Kelvin alludes to, I know that, you know, we probably won't get a lot of direct comms for the next little bit while the government sort of rolls this out. And then we'll start to get into some of these because, of course, plant breeding is one of the questions that a lot of people have as to, you know, what is Ag Canada's sort of, what is their role going forward and what will that look like? And we don't have a lot of details in this budget about that either. So that is still a big question. And a lot of these, exactly that, will be, we have to wait kind of until sort of we get into the details of this later. So lots to talk about. Yeah.
That's where Agriculture Canada reducing its spending on, quote, scientific activities,
right,
where they can be streamlined or where capacity exists within other stakeholders. I think that's where plant breeding and a number of other programs, whether we're talking about the off-calf program and things related to the Living Labs program, and there's also talk about Agriculture Canada is also going to be cutting management staff and rationalizing administration and that type of thing. So what's the impact there on agriculture? One other thing, big thing on the list here that Kyle Larkin at Grain Growers of Canada would want me to highlight here is there's $5 billion for Transport Canada for a new trade diversification corridors fund to strengthen export infrastructure. So there's some significant dollars there for potentially the Port of Vancouver or railways and that type of thing.
I when I saw that $5 billion, what came to mind was, is that enough in the context of what needs to happen?
I
don't know.
Yeah.
I'm still wrestling with that or trying to figure that out too. What was government spending on this in the past and what's the context on five? Yeah. It sounds like a big number, but
how
big a difference will that make?
Yeah. And how does this dovetail into some of the other measures, right? Like, are some of these like cumulative or are they one-offs, right? So like do some of these like play with each other? That's one of the things I want to know.
That's myself, Lindsay Smith, and Kelvin Heppner of Real Agriculture breaking down the ins and outs of this budget from an agriculture perspective. Encourage you to go to realagriculture.com. You can hear that full discussion that we had on the Real Ag Radio podcast as well. Another story where we break down all the points. Kelvin did a great job of putting all of that together. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got a product spotlight with Coke Agronomic Services right after this.
For balanced nutrition with micronutrients, the best answer is WolfTrax DDP from Koch Agronomic Services. To learn how WolfTrax can ensure nutrient availability through a crop's growth cycle, visit wolftrax.ca.
You're listening to Real Ag on the Weekend, hosted by Sean Haney of realagriculture.com on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. The following is a paid-for product spotlight by Koch Agronomic Services. And welcome back to Real Ag on the Weekend. It's now time for a product spotlight with Koch Agronomic Services. We're joined right now by Koch's Senior Agronomist for Canada. It is Bryce Geisel. Bryce, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well, Sean. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. Well, now, harvest is, we're getting a little bit closer to completion here. In Western Canada, pretty much done. And out east, there's some corn still to be wrapped up. But in areas where harvest is over and farmers are kind of working on that soil testing now in Western Canada, what should farmers be looking for as their soil tests start to come in from the lab?
Yeah, no, absolutely. As farmers start to kind of get their soil tests in and they're having those conversations with whoever's kind of providing that information for them, it's kind of good to just kind of have a review now of how did that look from that fertility planning they had originally set up to their crop yields and what that kind of is going to mean. What is the success they kind of had with what they were targeting with what they wanted to do at the start of the year, going way back already a year ago when they were coming into 25. So I think that's kind of the big things is to really kind of have a look at and see where things have kind of shaken out and what's maybe left in the tank. And that's going to be a big part of, obviously, it's Canada and Western Canada, and rain is going to be a big dictator in that and really kind of what drove those yields. And I think that's what we kind of got to go back now is look at those places that didn't get maybe enough rain. The yields weren't quite there. Have a look. What is still left in the soil? What, you know, that's going to help make some of those decisions and they can kind of make adjustments going into next year. for those that did get enough rain and they maybe hit those yields or bigger yields than they wanted, it's good to kind of have a look and see how did that fertility planning match up. Did they kind of hit what they were trying to do? Or did maybe they not provide enough of something and started to mine the soil, and that might need to be addressed going forward in future years as well.
Yeah, we don't want to be mining. No mining. Okay, so when we look at the soil test, a lot of times we talk about the macros, but the soil test can also tell us some things when it comes to the micronutrients as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can definitely get those soil tests for those micronutrients. And I think it's kind of good to remember that micronutrients are just essential for those crops as the macronutrients. They're just needed in those much smaller amounts. And what we tend to see is in the soil, they often show up in smaller amounts as well. So we tend to have a bit more of a narrow window in terms of if we start been taking a lot out, we can start to mine those soils down a fair bit. And we kind of go from a sufficiency to deficiency. And that's what a soil test will tell you. Where are you sitting in that amounts with your micronutrients? Are you in a deficiency range or in sufficiency ranges? If you're in deficiency, obviously that's going to be a part of that fertility planning. We don't want to be in a deficiency of any nutrient for those crops. So that should really be taken into consideration with your fertility planning. If you're in sufficiency, that's obviously in a good spot because you have enough there for the crop that's going to be needed. But now we need to think about those longer term goals. If we're in high sufficiency, you got lots in there, it's probably not something you need to worry about at this point in time. But if you are kind of at that lower end of your sufficiency range, that's probably something to be considering. What are your longer term goals for the field? Because you can pretty quickly go from sufficiency to deficiency, especially if you get also in a really good, fantastic growing year and you start pulling out a lot of nutrients and you get a lot of removal because you've got a lot of grain coming off. So that's really something to really consider is what is the long-term goals and then kind of build that fertility plan so that you can kind of make sure that you don't get yourself into a spot where you'll run out at some point.
Now, a company like Koch has a wide breadth of products when it comes to nutrients. How do I know that I'm using the right one or that I'm making the right choice here?
Yeah, it's definitely something. And there's a lot of different things, especially in the micronutrient world. We think of macronutrients, you know, it's pretty set in what you're kind of getting. There's obviously a few differences and combinations and things you can do. But in the micronutrients, you can have everything from oxides and salts to chelates, so different forms of micronutrients. The timings can be different in terms of you can do it at, you know, at planting seeding, you can do it foliar. There's lots of different ways you can apply. You can have, you know, granular products, you can have coated products, you can have foliars. Like, there's so many different things, and each of these products are going to have kind of a different fit, and that's really going to have to come down to having a conversation with your agronomist in your retail and really finding what's going to work well on your farm. Here at Koch Agronomic Services, we have WolfTrax DDP micronutrients, and so that's a dry dispersible powder. This is a product that gets applied onto the rest of your fertility blend, so that's really going to help with distribution across the field so the crops are able to access that nutrient equally and efficiently. It's going to have operational efficiencies, and the forms that we provide are going to allow for a very rapid plant uptake and availability. So it's just one way to do it, and one possible way to approach looking at your micronutrient fertility planning.
Yeah, now right now in farming, Bryce, margins are tight. Farmers are paying attention to, you know, potential return on investment when they're buying a product. So how should micronutrients fall on their list of importance in 2026?
So again, I think, you know, micronutrients, as we talked about, are just as essential as macronutrients, and really should always be kind of looked at, whether it's soil testing, fertility planning. But I think that kind of conversation has to go back. You have to kind of look at what is the long-term objectives of your farm, those fields, your crop, what are things sitting at, and you have to kind of make those decisions year by year. I think that's going to be the important part as we think about, you know, how we look at a return on investment. That's a conversation to have. Either maybe you're really good, you're listening out here and you're really good at doing fertility planning yourself and you kind of working through the math, or maybe you're working with a trusted advisor, trusted agronomist, and kind of having those conversations and working through. So I think that's kind of the big thing is where are things sitting as you're going to next year? What are the plans for those crops? What are you expecting? And making those decisions, because we can get in a situation where sometimes when you make applications of other nutrients, you can kind of start to cause a spread spread within those nutrients that you that the crop's going to need and force yourself into a deficiency if you're kind of borderline. So those are some things. I know some farmers out there are probably going to be penciling things out a little tighter. And that's really kind of a big piece, is going through and methodically and objectively kind of looking at each of those different inputs that are going in the field, having those conversations and making the best choice for them and where they think they're going to see the most return on investment, because the key is to make sure that they're going to get the crops that they're trying to get.
Now, Bryce, if somebody wants more information on Koch Agronomic Services lineup, where do they go?
You can come to kochagronomicservices.ca and you can learn about all our products, including WolfTrax DDP.
Great stuff. Bryce, thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
In talking to so many farmers at AgriTrade this week, this really is I think a really good time of the year, because we're looking ahead to what is in front of us in the next growing season, right? For a lot of Western Canadian farmers, they are done harvest, right? They've been done for a while. So we've had our break. We probably got some fall work done, maybe some of the fall fertilization, as Bryce and I were talking there. But now we're into, okay, what does the nutrient plan need to look for next year? What crops are going to go where? Maybe we don't have the entire crop rotation all figured out and all set, but we do have some flex acres that are built into there. But we have a good idea about that core part of our cropping plan. And thinking about the variety selection and the nutrient plan, of course, is a huge part of all of that. And that's what a lot of the stuff that happened at AgriTrade this week, right, is people lining that up. They're also talking machinery and things like that, but really, really putting into gear here the 2026 plans, because you got to be prepared, right? Got to be prepared. And that's what success is all about. Really appreciate Bryce Geisel joining us today for this product spotlight. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to find out what you, the farmer, how you feel about these EV tariffs that the Canadian government has put on China, and should they be lifted? We'll be right back right after this.
Invest in your farm's future with Acres for Education. Your donation will give students real-life experiences that will shape their views on agriculture. And every dollar is matched by JGL, doubling your impact. Learn more at aitc.sk.ca/acres for education.
You're listening to Real Ag on the Weekend, hosted by Sean Haney of realagriculture.com on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. In the October survey of the Canadian Farmer Sentiment Index, we asked if Canadian farmers how they feel about these EV tariffs and should they be lifted. Justin Funk of Real Agri Studies and myself, Real Agri Studies is the market research arm of Real Agriculture. We dove into this topic. Here's a portion of our discussion.
The question was, should the Canadian government lift tariffs on Chinese electric vehicles? And there was a pretty overwhelming response leaning one way on this. 68% said yes, 13% said no. And then there was a group that was either indifferent or not sure, just either, you know, didn't have an opinion or maybe couldn't come up with an opinion on this one. But I would say that one is pretty convincing.
Yeah, I'd run this number by Kelvin from Real Agriculture on Friday. And he's like, I'm actually surprised it's not higher than 68%. I think the indifferent kind of comes across as a little bit of a, yeah, whatever. But the I'm not sure is, I think, you know, in some ways I would argue that number, I'm surprised the number's not higher, because I read the I'm not sure as people are like, I don't know what we should do. You know, if we lift those EV tariffs, do we make the U.S. mad? If we lift the tariffs, does China actually remove the tariffs they have on Canadian ag commodities? There's a lot of unknowns here. And so, yeah, I'm not really sure. I don't know if we should do anything. And so I actually thought that number might be higher. 13% saying no, hold strong here. Kind of fascinating. This has been a controversial issue talked about in a lot of coffee shops across the country.
Well, and speaking of that, there were various opinions based on where you were in the country. This is one where we look at the geographical responses to this question, and you can clearly see here there is a very different opinion on this question based on whether you are in the east or the west. And of course, west in this case, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, BC, and then the east is everything Ontario and eastward. So a lot more I'm not sure in the east, but clearly, definitively, the west thinks that these tariffs should be lifted.
Yeah, I think these numbers do
makes sense. I will say, you know, in avid followers of Real Agriculture have heard me say this before, you know, we're connecting a lot of dots on these EV tariffs, right? So originally, just to the history lesson, they were put in place for Canada trying to work more closely with the Biden administration in terms of working against Chinese EVs coming into North America that are substantially cheaper than some of the vehicles that are being produced either in Canada or the U.S. And that hold has continued. Mexico has actually put EV tariffs on China as well for the same reasons. The premiers, if you want to look at Premier Ford or Premier Smith or Premier Mo, the premiers have made this about agriculture versus the auto sector for domestic political reasons. China applied the tariffs on ag commodities, not saying, hey, this is retaliation. They went through a whole bunch, you know, this is anti-dumping, and there's a whole process here, and it's confusing for people to kind of steer through. But no surprise, 78% of people in the West saying, lift the tariffs. Like, give us some hope here. I don't care if there's a guarantee or not on them lifting the canola tariffs or the pea tariffs. I just want to see those tariffs lifted because at least possibly it's a good chance. East, 48%, and I think we should understand why there's a difference here. It's not because those people in the East that are saying yes, or saying no at 20%. It's not that they don't care about agriculture, but they're more likely to have a family member, a friend that is in the auto sector. Right. And these tariffs and this whole battle has been the Ontario auto sector is very, very much under threat, but definitely less people in the East committed to this. Let's lift these tariffs for sure.
Yeah. The next series of questions focused on level of concern with various trading partners. And so we presented the respondents with a list of trading partners and then asked them to rate the degree of concern in everything from not concerned at all to extremely concerned. And, you know, what I want everybody to really pay attention to here are the green bars, even the lighter green that demonstrates here concern. And it's right there in front of us with the U.S., China, and India. Not to say there's not concern with some of the others, but these top three are really the top three for sure.
Yeah, and
this just gives it in a mean. I'm just going to show this one here.
Oh, so, even easier.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah, if the five gets extremely concerned, one is not concerned at all. So you can, I think, see it a little more clearly this way.
Yeah, and there's a lot more noise right now around the trading relationship between Canada and three countries, U.S., China, and India. And remember, this intake was done prior to India putting, you know, those or reapplying the tariff, a 30% tariff on Canadian peas again. So Canadian farmers, you know, were kind of ahead of the game. They're smart here. They realized and saw that we should be concerned about trade with India, and India followed through on some of those concerns. So, Real Ag Studies Insights panel showing they're on top of these issues indeed. And you know, with United States at 4.49 out of five, that's pretty high concern, Justin. Mm-hmm. China at 4.48, they're virtually the same number. Canada caught in between both of these countries in several ways. And the U.S. is our largest trading partner, so there's reason for concern there. And some of the things that President Trump has said about Canada, the trading relationship, whether it's we don't need Canada or it's the 51st state sort of rhetoric back from earlier in the year. And the other largest economy in the world is China, and they haven't been very friendly to Canada either, even with Carney seeming to have a pretty positive meeting last week. Farmers want to see some outcome and some change to that relationship, so they are, I think, rightfully concerned.
Yeah. When we look at the geographical responses, we won't pay attention to any particular number here necessarily unless you want to point something out, Sean. But my conclusion here is, it's right there on the chart, that there's a greater level of concern amongst all these trading partners in the West than there is in the East. Now, it's marginal in some cases, but if you eyeball those numbers, they're all higher on the left than they are on the right.
Yep, and Western Canadian agriculture, a little bit more export-oriented. So it's a little bit, you know, I think that's probably what's driving a little bit of that is, and we should actually go back and look, we'll have to do that in the future. When we think about the biggest concerns that farmers had around the 2026 cropping year, was there east-west differences on trade being a part of that top three? We talked about that prior video, but I agree with you. Definitely farmers here showing greater concern amongst all the trade partners west-east.
That was my conversation with Justin Funk of Real Agri Studies. Encourage you to go to realagristudies.com and check out the full conversation. There's slides in the video on our YouTube channel that you need to check out. There's some really insightful stuff because you, the farmers on our insights panel, answered some of the questions. We'll see what Carney does. I do wonder, is the window open right now? Right now, because fresh off of the U.S. trade deal or agreement with China, is right now the good time to lift these? Maybe the time was better than it was, say, 3 weeks ago. We'll have to see what the Carney government does. If you have any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Send me an email, shaney@realagriculture.com. Why not text the Real Ag feedback line, 855-776-6147. If you want to keep up to speed on everything that's going on in the world of agriculture, make sure you check out realagriculture.com. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we'll talk again next week.